wrong. She listened, visualizing it. And then, all sound disappeared. She squeezed the blaster's trigger again, felt it recoil slightly, but heard nothing. Her entire universe became one of pin-drop silence. It was as if she'd gone deaf as well as blind. All her most vital sensory organs abandoning her at the moment she needed them most. And then Siddiqui realized what was happening. Somehow, the sealed data center had put itself into silent mode. "No!" she cried into the void. But the soundproof systems devoured her voice, swallowing it whole along with every other sonic disturbance. She had no sense of where the thing was now, how close or far away, whether it was hovering just centimeters from her face, its maw open and ready to latch onto her. Panic seized her, and she started firing randomly into the great expanse of darkness, swinging the weapon back and forth, strafing the space around her as if she could somehow shoot a hole through it, penetrating the thick layer of isolation that had left her utterly exposed here. At last, the blaster stopped recoiling, and she realized it was empty. "No!" Siddiqui croaked again, but heard nothing. "No!" This wasn't happening. Couldn't be. Not now. After she'd come so far and worked so hard to build her empire. From the beginning, she'd taken every precaution, calculated every risk, considered every angle. For all of it to end up here, with her crouched in some remote corner, blind, deaf, and mute? Tears formed in her sightless eyes, and her body started trembling. The imperfect balance of sanity tipping away from her in increments. Knees drawn up against her chest, arms extended, she gripped the useless weapon in both hands. As though, if she held on to it tightly enough, it might yet save her. She was still sitting like that when it fell upon her. '67. The man comes around. Maul looked at Radik for a moment in silence. After searching for him for so long, the sight of him standing less than 2 meters away brought with it a distinct tremor of unreality, as if this too might be little more than a dream. Radik was a tall, near-human with blue skin, gleaming black hair and glowing red eyes. He was dressed in black robes, with black gloves and boots fashioned from the same thick, well-polished reptile skin. His face was lean and cold, as if carved from a solid block of vardium steel. Crimson eyes gazed back at Maul, and his lips twisted with a kind of quiet arrogance that spoke of 1,000 enemies vanquished, 1,000 attempts on his life survived. The clawbirds had settled around behind him, gathered at his feet.
"I see you found my pets," Radik said. "Or they found you."
"You knew they would,"
Maul said.
"You sent them for me."
"Perhaps I did."
"We have to go,"
Maul said.
"The Bando Gora is already among us."
"The Gora."
Radik's face tightened with the briefest flicker of pain.
"You have made a grave mistake bringing those vermin here."
He glanced at Iagan.
"The boy's father paid for it with his life. Now it seems that your life, too, shall be forfeit because of them."
Maul didn't move.
"You don't believe me?
Or you don't believe in the power that I wield?"
"Neither."
Maul stepped forward.
"I've simply been given no choice in the matter, and neither have you."
He cast his gaze across the weapon shop. Of the assembly line of eyeless inmates that had been laboring over the different gun parts and components the last time he'd been here, fewer than half remained. The ones that were left sat rigid in front of partially assembled weapons, gripping the table with white knuckles. Were Radik's people deserting him, fleeing during these final moments? Or was there some deeper mutiny taking place?
You're mistaken,
Radik said. Maul looked back at those red eyes. For a long moment, neither of them spoke. Then, all at once, the entire prison gave a violent, galvanic shudder, hard enough to shift the racks and rows of crates strapped down against the back wall. Radik never lifted his gaze from Maul.
It's all coming to an end, Maul said. If we don't act now, we'll all die here.
We'll die regardless.
Radik pressed his finger into Maul's chest.
You still carry an explosive in your heart, Jagannath. Don't forget. And your time is running out.
He nodded down to the floor beneath the workspace, and Maul looked down to see where the other prisoners had gone. They lay dead under the table, their eyeless sockets upraised into whatever version of oblivion had overtaken them.
What happened?
If I had to speculate, Radik said, I believe that Warden Siddiqui has launched the Omega Initiative. It's a fail-safe mechanism designed to systematically trigger the electronic charges in the hearts of all the inmates here.
Including you?
Well, Radik's smile was razor-thin. I've got what you might call special dispensation.
Wait, Egan said. So you mean... He glanced at Maul, then back at Radik, his voice going higher in pitch. How much time do we have?
That depends on your number. Lower ones go first. But you'll get your turn, I'm sure.
Then we have no time to waste, Maul said. Somewhere in your shop, you've got a proscribed nuclear device. You're going to help me deliver it into the hands of the Bandogora. That's all.
The room shook again, harder. On the floor, the piles of the eyeless dead shifted and twitched together like a deputation of spastics.
Why would I defy a lifelong oath never to do business with a cult of criminal thugs who tried to kill me?
Radik asked. Without answering, Maul pushed past him toward the table, where a half-packed crate of Radik's synthetic lightsaber sat open, forgotten by the inmate who'd been working on it. He reached in and took one of them out, popped open the hilt, and withdrew the crystal.
Boy, he said, open the package.
Egan blinked and then dropped to his knees next to the parcel that they'd brought up from the loading bay. Peeling back the outer shell, he withdrew an oblong console, laying it out on the floor. The compressor unit itself was sleek and nearly featureless, with the exception of a small transparent dome on top.
You recognize the new geological compressor,
Maul said.
You were expecting its arrival. You sent Slipher to go retrieve it.
Without waiting for Radik's response, he lifted the lid and dropped the synthetic crystal inside. He closed his eyes, placing both hands on the compressor, letting the power of the dark side move through him as the console warmed beneath his palms. He could feel the crystal changing inside it, its very atoms shifting, the lattice tightening and binding together into new molecules, becoming something utterly different beneath the applied pressure of the Force. Opening the compressor, he removed the crystal and held it up. It looked different now. Darker, heavier, its facets gleaming with a deeper shade of red. Maul slipped it back into the lightsaber, reassembled the components, and held the weapon up, flicking the switch. The beam sprang to life in his hand, filling the shop with the familiar oscillating hum that he would have recognized in his sleep. The blade was solid, straight, and true. Maul could feel the power of the thing vibrating through the bones of his forearm, a natural extension of his own innate strength. Extending his arm to its full length, he waited while Radik examined it. The arms dealer's bluish face had changed color in the light of the beam.
Remarkable,
he whispered.
I can show you how it's done,
Maul said.
But first I need the nuclear device delivered. And I need the explosives disarmed inside my chest. The droid from Medbay can do that.
What makes you think?
There's no time to argue. Do we have a deal or not?
Radik looked at him. The room gave another jerk, and Maul saw that several more of the workers had dropped to the floor on top of the bodies that were already there. He held out his hand. Switching off the lightsaber, Maul placed it in the other's waiting palm.
The nuclear device is in that crate,
Radik said, giving a side nod to the large box strapped to the wall in the far corner of the shop. He hadn't taken his red-eyed gaze from the lightsaber in his hand.
Over there, at the end.
Come, boy.
Maul nodded at the crate.
We don't have much time.
Wait, what about the electrostatic charges in our hearts?
Egan asked.
We'll detour past the medbay,
Maul said, keeping his eyes fixed on the red-eyed man.
Mr. Radik will have the droid ready for us.
How do we know?
It's in his best interest.
If I'm dead, I won't be able to show him what he needs to know about the lightsabers.
Without waiting for acknowledgement from Radik, Maul crossed over to the crate and unstrapped it. It was warm to the touch, and humming slightly from within.
Now, boy.
Reluctantly, Egan picked up his end and they lifted, carrying it out of the shop. One of Radik's claw birds flew in front of them, and they followed it down the concourse toward the upper levels of the prison. Not long afterward, they started to come across the bodies.
68. Malefactors.
Jabba,
Voza said, staring into the hologram.
Why am I not surprised to find you in the middle of this?
The hollow bit of the hut perched above her, glaring down at her through baleful eyes. His henchmen, the remaining Gamorreans who hadn't followed the newly released prisoners on a looting spree through Coghive 7, aimed their blasters at the Bando Gora standing behind her.
Gomari Voza,
the crime lord snarled in Huttese, his no longer amused gaze traveling across the group of skull-masked Gora soldiers.
What are you and your brain-dead army of minions doing here?
We were summoned here.
Voza gestured across the hangar.
I trust you'll let us pass?
Jabba cursed, uttering a phlegmy oath in Huttese.
You'll trust wrong, insect. I will crush you like the foul infection that you are.
You'll try.
Reaching down, Voza withdrew the twin curved hilt lightsabers that she wore at her hips, activating both blades simultaneously, filling the air around her with an electrifying vibrational hiss. The effect, even on Jabba himself, was immediate and impressive. The hollow flickered, and when it returned, he gestured to the Gamorreans flanking him, grunting out an order of execution.
Dogwe! Kipuna!
The Gamorreans opened fire from either side, but Voza moved faster than they could shoot, faster even than the naked eye could see. Adapting the Form 1 style of Sarisu, she whirled her lightsabers in front of her, their blades absorbing and deflecting the blasts easily from all sides. The outcome was never truly in doubt. Darting forward, she slashed the blaster directly from the hand of the nearest bug, piston kicked him backward, and spun to bisect the Trandoshan behind her neatly at the waist. Throughout it all, the expression on her face, focused yet unhurried, almost relaxed, revealed virtually nothing about what was happening inside her mind, nor about the true purpose of her visit here. Heads down, Bando Gora soldiers charged forward to overtake Jabba's entourage, their staffs blazing with greenish balls of fire that arced and exploded in the faces of the startled Gamorreans. Within seconds, they decimated the hut's hired muscle, leaving their bodies splayed limp on the floor of the hangar. "Now," Voza said, deactivating the lightsabers as she made her way toward the holovid. "Since we've dispatched with the unpleasantries, I take it you'll allow me to complete my work here?"
"You'll fight well for a Jedi whore,"
Jabba told her, arms upraised in a gesture of mock surrender.
"I see that you've lost none of your skills."
"Jedi?" Voza frowned, a single wrinkle creasing her forehead as if the word itself triggered its own private dose of pain. "That word is blasphemy to me."
"Is it?"
Jabba chuckled, probing more deeply.
"And what of your beloved Master Dooku? Surely, as his former Padawan, there must be a lingering warmth in your heart for him still, after all that he did for you."
"Dooku." Voza's lips tightened, and all the easy confidence that she displayed just seconds earlier began to ebb away. The tightness that replaced it made her face appear angular, and her yellow eyes blazed. "You dare not speak that obscenity before me, now or ever."
"Ah!"
Emboldened by her response, Jabba pushed on.
"And yet I wonder, have you considered that he may yet harbor feelings for you? That in time, he could possibly come and join you to lead your army of..."
"Enough!"
The word burst from Voza's lips, and in a fusillade of inarticulate pain and rage, she lunged forward, swinging both lightsabers outward at the holovid, the blade sweeping through his image. The hut chuckled with appreciation.
"You do contain great depths, Gomari Voza. Perhaps you would consider an alliance?"
"The Bando Gora allies with no one."
"You've associated with Gardula Basadi in the past. Help me get rid of her, and perhaps I'll let you leave this prison alive."
Voza shook her head. "Never."
"Foolish to the last."
The hut nodded unperturbed.
"Make no mistake, scum. I will exterminate you in due time. Just not this time."
"Or ever."
"We'll see."
Waving one hand at the berthing dock from which Voza and her army had emerged, Jabba's holovid image settled back on the repulsor platform with a faint smirk. It was the indulgent expression of a singularly untrustworthy uncle whose favor was merely an indication of profound treachery to come.
"My business here is through. Be on your way."
But Voza was already gone, storming across the hangar, followed by her army, toward what awaited them on the upper levels. She moved quickly, as if there was something else pursuing her, something that she alone could see. And so it was. Ensconced in her private darkness, Voza had always moved with a speed and purpose unmitigated by the weakness of human emotion. Back in the hangar, the holovid image of the hut had touched upon it briefly but agonizingly, with his flagrant evocation of the Order and the one whose name still caused her unspeakable pain. Voza hated herself for the way she'd responded. Her first and most enduring instinct to bury that pain, sinking it so deeply into her unconscious mind that it could no longer touch her, had not worked as it should. It wasn't supposed to hurt like this anymore. Making her way up through the empty corridors of Coghive 7, she felt cracks forming in her resolve.
press on.
Yes. That was all that mattered. The Order was dead to her now. A crumbling artifact of her distant past. As was her former master, her sworn enemy, whom she now thought of only as an abomination before everything that mattered. Although the memory of his face and their times together still held powerful sway over her. When she thought of him, Voza felt something moving inside her chest, a gravitational shift that took hold of her most basic emotions. Curse the hut for mentioning him, dredging those thoughts up now. But it was too late to stop. With an uncharacteristic twinge of masochism, Voza allowed herself to think on the name consciously, touching on it like the tip of the tongue to an infected tooth. Just once.
Dooku.
And pushed it aside. Glancing back at the captain, who'd followed her with unfailing loyalty, and the skull-masked fighters gathered behind her, Voza reassured herself that this was right. She had a new alliance, new blood oaths, as leader of an unstoppable army of fighters who would willingly lay down their lives for her. It was enough.
69. Low numbers.
Getting the crate across the open area outside the mess hall took longer than Maul had anticipated. They had to step over all the bodies. The gallery was littered with them. Everywhere they looked, inmates of the hive were sinking to the floor, faces gone slack and lifeless, landing unceremoniously on top of the dead prisoners who'd actually succumbed to the electrostatic charges. The smell of death had begun to fill this place as the prison transformed itself into a vast floating crypt. The claw bird that was leading them stopped occasionally to land on one of the bodies and pluck out an eye. It wasn't entirely silent. Off in the distance, from the long corridors leading to the cells, Maul heard occasional shrieks and cries for help. The pleas of those who hadn't yet died, perhaps, or the primitive outcry of the new inmates that Jabba had released from the incoming barge, the ones without bombs inside their hearts. At one point, a spate of blaster fire rang out and ceased abruptly, followed by a wild shrieking symphony of lunatic laughter. Madness had triumphed in the final hours of Coghive 7. 20 meters in front of them, a group of prisoners, Maul realized that they were the last surviving members of the Bone Kings and Gravity Massive, brought together in the penultimate moments of their lives, came scurrying out of the mess hall carrying a tremendous steaming vat of stolen food. They walked past Maul and Eagan without so much as a sidelong glance. Nobody stopped them. The last remaining guards seemed to have gone into hiding. Unless those were the screams Maul kept hearing. He wondered if the newly arrived inmates were holding the guards somewhere and torturing them slowly. Or perhaps they'd met the worm. As they approached the far side of the gallery, Eagan kept glancing down, trying to read the numbers on their uniforms, as if it could give him an idea of how far along the process was. Even Maul, despite his commitment to the task at hand, found himself wondering how much longer they had. There were to be no more matches to save him now.
"The med bay is just through here," he said. "It's not too late. The surgical droid can..."
Maul stopped walking, not out of uncertainty, but simply to stretch out with his feelings to see if he could ascertain where the Bando Gora was at this precise moment. Somewhere in the outer reaches of his sensibilities, a pang of unease stung him. A twinge that he associated most closely with those moments at the top of the Limerge building, when he'd stared at the window of the Jedi Temple in the distance.
"Voza is here. Very close now."
He would finish his task for his master, yes.
but the possibility that he might drop dead from something as maddeningly trivial as an electrostatic discharge in his heart before he could confront the filthy ex-Jedi who'd come here to face him was more than even Maul himself could bear. In the end, that was what decided it.
The medbay, then,
he said with a nod, ignoring the expression of relief that flashed across the boy's face as he said it.
Quickly.
Seventy. The Killing Moon.
Wait.
Voza held up her fist without glancing back at the Bandor Gora warriors who stood behind her, and they came to a halt. They'd made their way up from the hangar toward the prison's main holding level, encountering almost no resistance from the remaining residents of this place. Not that she'd expected any. These inmates seemed to be dying faster and faster around them, dropping to their knees without so much as a whimper. The corpses, the smell of them, reminded her of Bogdan, the burial moon where so much had changed for her. Of the handful of armed maniacs they'd confronted in the prison's utility corridors, only one or two had presented the slightest challenge to her soldiers. Using their staffs, the Gora had gutted them and ripped them to shreds, accomplishing Voza's bidding with the mindless, unwavering obedience to which she herself had enslaved them. It had happened quickly. A streaking storm of violence, then stillness. Watching them go about their dark and bloody work brought her no sense of pride, although it did appease some dark and atavistic hunger within her. A need to establish dominance over the situation and impose her will upon it. For her, stability and power would always be a matter of conquest, the relentless commitment to absolute mastery. After what had happened with the Jedi and her former master, she would never allow herself to feel out of control again. It would be a form of suicide. Now she stood motionless, her mind reaching out into the rippling currents of the Force until she became aware of its most pronounced disturbance. Maul was here, closer than she'd hoped. And after she had found him and taken possession of the weapon that she'd been summoned here to acquire, she would kill him. Gladly.
This way,
she instructed them, giving the order silently, a telekinetic command that sent them down a corridor. Her heart was beating faster now, driving her forward. And it might have been that sense of reckless urgency that allowed her to walk into what happened next. Rounding the corner, she saw it. The thing to which her Force sensibilities had somehow been blinded. On either side, her warriors froze in their tracks. The creature in front of them was a colossal, gelid horror, its engorged presence filling the entire concourse in front of them. Voza realized that it was some kind of roiling white worm, 5 meters high and perhaps 3 times as long, its hooked, leech-like mouth currently filled with the still-squirming bodies of the inmates it had devoured. The thing rounded on them, raising its hideous blind head with a sudden jerk that caused the severed lower half of the torso it had been eating to fall back out on the floor. When it lunged forward, mouth parts peeling back, the Gora attacked it with their staffs, strafing it with balls of energy that exploded off the worm's slick and pulsating skin without stopping it. It recoiled, flattening itself against the floor, then shot forward again with speed that defied its great dripping bulk. Before Voza could command her soldiers to step back, the worm opened its mouth, sucking 2 of the warriors into its maw. Voza activated her lightsabers and dove at it. Slashing both blades across the thing's flesh, she carved deep lacerations into its underside. Pale yellow fluid came trickling out, sticky and viscous, and with it, Voza realized that she could hear the voice, or voices of the worm inside her head. a tangled litany of threats and pleas for mercy.
Jedi is here.
Kill us, Jedi.
Set us free.
Rip your lungs from your chest.
Tear the scream from your lips.
Devour you whole.
Voza sprang at it again, her blades coming to life in a blinding, gyroscopic storm of Jarkai technique that had served her so well in the past. Spinning both blades in the rising whirlwind maneuver, she launched a frontal attack on the worm's underbelly. Its innards spilled out, layers of pulsating fat and vessels sluicing outward to fill the open corridor around her ankles. Throughout it all, Voza didn't yield or even slow her attack. Rather, she gave herself over to it completely, allowing the killing rage to transport her into a state of weightless abandon. Badly wounded, the thing reared back again, as if what she'd done had introduced it to pain that it had never known before. It jerked sideways and went slithering quickly backward through an open hole in the wall behind it. For a moment, Voza stood with both lightsabers still activated and her army behind her, all of them waiting for what might happen next. Had the thing run off somewhere to die? In that instant, she allowed herself to think that the battle, this part of it at least, might be over. Then the ceiling moved above her. Her soldiers, as one, lifted their heads and looked up. When the ceiling blasted open, the worm came spilling down on top of them with a deafening crash, flattening the warriors in an avalanche of its flesh. At once, Voza knew she'd underestimated the thing's cunning, and now she understood what those tangled voices in her head had represented. The conflagration of innate sensibilities, survival skills, and pure vicious instinct that comprised its hive mind. The last of the Bandogora warriors edged back, clutching their staffs, momentarily shaken and awaiting new orders. Voza waited, facing off against the thing herself. The worm lifted its head, its mandibles clicking and snapping audibly with a spastic, giddy eagerness. From this distance, Voza could see that the cuts she'd inflicted on it had already begun to crust over and heal. Then it opened its mouth, unhinging its jaws to the widest possible extent. The result was hideous. In that moment, the thing actually seemed to become all mouth, until the entire front of its head was nothing more than an enormous gaping black hole that, for an instant, loomed as wide as the corridor itself. This time, even the Bandogora were not fast enough. Sucking in, the worm inhaled them all in a great slurping vacuum, clearing the space around Voza in the space of a heartbeat. Yet she stood her ground, lightsabers ready, reaching out to the thing, or whatever element of sentience it might have possessed. "What are you?" she asked aloud, startled by the sound of her own voice. And although she'd hardly expected an answer, one was forthcoming, put forth in an outburst of varying tones and inflections.
"We are
that which you fear."
Voza drew in a breath. The terrible coldness spread through her like nothing she'd felt since her early days on Bogdan, when the Gora torturers had worked day and night to break her spirit, crush her body, and drive her to the brink of insanity, and ultimately beyond, into what she'd become now. The moment was excruciating. It was like looking in a mirror and seeing her two selves. Who she had once been under Dooku and the Jedi Council, and what she'd become. Her own pitiless face reflected back at her in the soulless, grasping mandibles of this blind and unstoppable predator.
"We are you."
"No," she managed, but it was too late. It came at her again in one quick lunge, and Voza reacted without thought,
using an instinctive burst of force push to drive herself backward up the corridor, opening up a 20-meter gap between herself and the thing.
It was enough time and space to allow her to hit the floor in a dead run and not look back. Looking back on those vertiginous moments, when time itself had become a blur and conscious thought was utterly lost to her, Voza remembered little. She had never fled from another opponent like that before, which was perhaps why it felt so utterly disorienting. It wasn't so much the worm that she was trying to outrun, but what the thing had promised her within itself. A final resting place where her identity would descend into the murk of murderers, crime lords, tyrants, and anonymous scum whose agonies would ultimately become as familiar to her as her own. In the end, she would be just another voice crying out from inside the great swollen tube of the thing's being. At last her steps slowed down and she regained control over herself. Resolve came quickly. No one would ever be allowed to know what had happened here. There was no reason to speak of it. Coming here had been a mistake. She was preparing to leave, to find her way back down to the ship, when she heard screams coming from up the corridor. And in the silence that followed, the voice of the one she'd been sent to meet. Maul.
The sum of its parts.
The medical droid was nowhere to be found.
Wait, Egan was saying. He'd put down his end of the crate and was now pacing quickly through the medbay, searching for the GH-7, as if the droid might have gone into hiding somewhere. You said that it could deactivate the charges. Where did it go?
Maul said nothing. He'd assumed that Radik would meet them up here to use whatever inside influence he had to disarm the explosives in his chest. He knew from Radik's expression that he wanted Maul's insight on the lightsabers, which meant the arms dealer needed to keep him alive, at least long enough to. The wall shook hard enough that Maul had to steady himself against the hatchway. By now, the entire prison was rocking steadily around them, the tremors coming with such violence and frequency that they never really seemed to stop. Gaps were opening in the joinery overhead, where exposed wires spat and fumed with sparks.
Jagannath!
Maul turned and looked over to where the boy had already stopped in his tracks, staring down at the scorched pile of processors and components scattered haphazardly across the floor. What was left looked so little like a droid that they'd stepped right over it before. The GH-7's head and manipulator arms had been blasted off completely, and the rest of its circuitry seemed to have caught fire and melted into slag.
What happened to it?
Egan asked, his tone splintering with near panic.
We have to fix it!
That's impossible, the low voice said behind them.
Maul and Egan turned to look at the hatchway through which they'd entered. Radik was standing there, blue skin gleaming, staring at them coldly. Maul watched as Radik spread his arms wide, allowing his claw birds to land on him. A dozen or more perched from shoulder to wrist on either side. The feathered black bodies and piercing, soulless eyes were a visual echo of his own. They made low, restless, hungry sounds.
What happened to the surgical droid?
Egan asked him.
Blasted to pieces by hostile inmates would be my guess, Radik said. Not that it matters now. You're inmate 10009, aren't you? Raising his face back up to meet Egan's desperate expression, Radik shook his head. I think your number is up.
No!
The boy yelled and swung out his fist at the weapons dealer, but the punch was wild, and Radik saw it coming with plenty of time to duck. The claw birds on his arms took immediate flight, cawing and shrieking as they swept down on Egan, going for his eyes.
The boy swung his arms furiously, trying to ward them off, but there were too many of them. Over his shoulder, Maul could hear the hungry, greedy noises they made as they pecked at the boy's face and hands. All around them, the medbay shook harder, as if stirred to life by the attack. Maul's arm shot out, grabbing Radik by his black tunic and jerking him close.
Call them off.
Then he felt it, the lightsaber activating in Radik's hand. Radik raised it up in front of him and swung it at Maul. Maul ducked, the blade humming over his head.
One final match,
Radik said, stepping forward.
I think Warden Blur would have approved, don't you?
He paused to admire the blade in his hands.
You do amazing work, Jagannath, you know that. You must tell me your secret.
Come closer, Maul said, and I will. Radik's lips quirked into a slight smile.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Maul just looked at him, into the red eyes, measuring the distance between them.
When it comes to weapons, Radik continued, I am a proud man. But,
he turned the blade from right to left, inspecting it more closely from all angles.
I have no problem acknowledging the work of a fellow master's hand when I see it. Surely it's not just a matter of the geological compressor. So tell me, Jagannath, how is it that you knew exactly what my synth crystals required in order to become fully functional?
Maul moved on at once. Gripping the bank of diagnostic equipment behind him, he leaned back and swung his right foot up, driving it hard into Radik's chest. With a sudden grunt, Radik flew backward, crashing into the far wall, the lightsaber spinning out of his hand. Maul caught it in the air and swung it around just as the clawbirds came at him from all sides, dive-bombing his face and throat, their talons and beaks assaulting him. He whirled, the red blade becoming a blur, cutting the birds down around him as they screamed and cawed and swooped. Within seconds, the air was full of black feathers drifting downward. Maul kicked their bodies aside and brought the tip of the blade down to where Radik was sprawled on the floor, head to the side, exposing the throbbing vein in his neck.
Jagannath,
another voice managed, and from somewhere behind him, Maul heard a soft thud. Keeping his blade close to Radik's throat, Maul glanced around where Iagan had fallen. The boy's once smooth face was a cross-hatched nightmare of cuts and scratches from the bird's attack. But that wasn't what had killed him. He lay motionless on the floor, not far from the disassembled droid that could have saved him. It was over for the boy, Maul saw. Egan's eyes were still open, but their whites were already beginning to glaze. His lips were slightly parted, as if he'd still been trying to say something, make some final pronouncement or plea, when the charges had finally gone off in his heart.
Too bad. Radik shook his head. Not that he didn't deserve it. His father was a worthless waste of skin, and so was he.
He raised his head back up to Maul.
Shall we continue our fight?
Maul looked down at Egan's body one last time. In the end, he felt no obligation to the boy himself. Compassion and pity were as alien to him as they'd ever been. Yet Egan had stood with him to the end, and something about his death needed to be set to rights. He brought the lightsaber closer to Radik's throat.
This match is over.
Radik grinned.
Not yet.
Maul didn't see the blaster until it went off in Radik's hand. It was a pocket model, small enough that Radik must have been able to hide it in his sleeve. The shot caught Maul point blank in the meat of his right shoulder, ripping through the muscle and knocking him backward into a wild sunburst pattern of his own blood.
The lightsaber, Radik said.
Give it back to me. Now. Maul tried to move his right arm, flexing his fingers.
With the tissue and nerve damage in his shoulder, he was not at all sure that he could get the lightsaber out and cut Radik down before he fired again. At this distance, one shot was all he'd need.
Suit yourself. Radik leveled the blaster at his face. Then I'll take it off your corpse.
Maul saw his grip tighten on the weapon, the knuckle constricting visibly behind the trigger guard, and heard a sudden grunt as the boy sprang up from the floor and threw himself at Radik. The arms dealer hadn't seen him coming from that angle, and Egan was fast enough to knock him flat, holding him to the floor while he groped for the blaster, twisting it around in his hand.
No!
Radik snarled, trying to elbow him off and push him away without releasing the blaster.
No! No!
The boy didn't bother wasting his breath, nor did he try to take the weapon from Radik. Jaw set, lips clamped tight, his bloody eyes fixed on the task at hand, Egan simply kept twisting the blaster until Maul heard the bones in Radik's wrists crack, until the barrel was pointed straight back up at his face, and it went off in a single blinding flash. Radik's head jerked sideways and disappeared in a cloud of blood and cranial matter that evacuated itself across the wall behind him. His corpse slumped sideways into a sagging pile, the boy pulling himself away from it, then drawing himself upward into a standing position, wiping his hands on his pants. He drew in a low, shuddering breath.
So now, he turned to Maul. I guess we're even.
Maul glanced at the boy's chest, and Egan shrugged.
In the med bay the first time, when my father and I tried to escape, the droid put a needle in my chest. It must have been enough to deactivate the charges.
You knew? Maul asked.
I wanted to be sure.
Egan reached down and picked up the blaster from Radik's broken and stiffening fingers.
How's your shoulder?
Maul said nothing. And the boy tilted his chin upward, glancing abruptly behind him. That was when Maul became aware, suddenly, of another presence standing in the door of the medbay, watching them. Her arrival had eluded him until this very second. But now, he recognized it fully.
Kumari Voza.
The name twisted from his lips like a curse.
You have come.
'72. Stick it out.
Maul,
Voza said, stepping into the medbay with a glance at the arms dealer's body and the boy standing over it.
Am I interrupting something?
Ignoring the question, Maul glanced at the curved-handled lightsabers that hung from her belt.
You wear your heritage on your hips.
Not my heritage, she said. My livelihood.
My master specifically ordained for us to meet,
Maul said. A new species of tension was taking shape in his chest, filling his lungs and spreading outward into his extremities as the fullness of the dark side made itself manifest.
We have business, you and I.
Voza stood her ground, feet planted, face attentive, body poised to strike.
The only business that we have is your imminent destruction.
Charging at her, he sprang up, swinging his lightsaber in a swooping hum to meet her in mid-leap. Voza was ready for him, and their blades clashed together, her initial defensive pose absorbing the momentum of the attack and pushing him backward. From the corner of his eye, Maul saw Egan raise Radik's blaster pistol, and before he could utter a word, Voza stretched out her hand and knocked it from his grasp with a burst of force push, slamming the boy to the floor.
Stay out of this,
she told him.
You'll...
The room reverberated with a massive crackling boom, followed by a series of low-level aftershocks. It was as if Coghive 7, having lost interest in all the routine reconfigurations, was now determined to shake off entire layers of itself.
"Wait," Maul said. "I summoned you here to take possession of a weapon."
Not to, but Voza was moving again, whirling backward, spinning and evading. And no matter how he tried to defend against her, his blade met open air. The awareness of what she was doing, drawing on the Force and her own repulsive relationship with it, only made him more determined to end this battle decisively.
"You're weak,"
she goaded him, dropping back and making him come to her.
"Your right arm is slowing you down. Even your weapon is betraying you."
Maul kept coming, relying more and more on his left arm, saving the right for when he'd need it most. But Voza seemed to anticipate everything he was doing, dropping low and then springing up and outward into an open space along a row of diagnostic machinery in the corner of the medbay. Maul's lower lip drew back to reveal his teeth. If defeating Voza was what he needed to do in order to get the weapon in the hands of the Gora, so be it. Gripping the lightsaber's hilt, he squared his shoulders and swung again, thrusting his blade at her in a series of perfectly angled slashes. Voza came back at him on the offense, both blades spinning.
"Ja-Kai!"
Maul snarled, deflecting her assault on reflex.
"Predictable."
He swung the lightsaber down, but at that moment, the corridor shook again, jerking sideways, throwing them both off. Voza recovered first, darting back, again too quick, and the speed with which she evaded his attack only inflamed the rage inside Maul's mind, stoking his wrath until it crystallized into a kind of malignant grace. Now he gripped the lightsaber in both arms, forcing his damaged right arm into service and gripping the hilt of his saber with his full strength. It was time for Juyo, the Way of the Vornskr, the last of the seven forms. He seized upon it eagerly, allowing himself to be swept up in the chaotic frontal assault of thrusts, slashes, and jabs.
"Maul!"
A tremor of new fear pulsed across Voza's face, disrupting her composure, as if she'd finally recognized the true ferocity of his purpose. Darting backward into a desperate evasive measure, Voza whirled one of her blades behind her, hacking loose a massive shelf of surgical instruments from its place on the wall, and with a swing of the hand, she used a force push to fire them at him in a glinting storm of steel. Maul ducked the flying instruments and bobbed back up with a silent snarl. In his mind, the duel was all but over. His opponent was now dragging out the inevitable moment of defeat in a series of small humiliations. By turning to such diversionary tactics, Voza had all but admitted that she was no match for the erratic staccato blows that he was delivering, seemingly from everywhere, all at once.
"Kill her. Kill her now. Then you may deliver the weapon to any of the Bandor Gora who remain."
Pivoting easily, he swung out at her, the dark side screaming so powerfully from him now that it seemed to be pouring forth in great explosive torrents. His blade was moving almost too fast to see, cutting great fan-shaped swaths in the air around him. All around them, the whole world seemed to be blowing itself to pieces. Voza went low, swinging out one leg in a last fruitless attempt to catch him off balance, and he brought the lightsaber down in a great hungry arc, holding off just long enough to savor the expression on her face.
"Now, plead for your life."
"Sorry."
She tilted her chin up at him, wiped the blood from her lip, and grinned.
"You're going to have to try a lot harder than that."
Before he could respond, she rammed the top of her skull into his shoulder, headbutting the open wound. A rocket of white-hot fury sizzled inside Maul's forebrain, all but obliterating conscious thought. He let out a roar and prepared to finish her off. That was when the floor erupted beneath them, the alloy plates bursting open to reveal something so vast and incomprehensible that Maul didn't recognize it until it tried to bite his leg off. With a jolt of shock, he saw that the thing that had exploded upward had already taken his foot into the hideous suction cup of its mouth. The worm. Its appearance here provided Komari Voza the last opportunity she needed to right herself and make her escape, leaping upward and then bounding off the wall console behind her.
Coward!
A voice shouted from inside Maul's brain.
Weakling! Jedi scum!
It is exactly like your kind to flee at the first sign of...
In that split second, the thought broke off as he realized that she wasn't running away. She was coming at the worm.
The Wreckers.
Lightsabers alive and oscillating in front of her, Voza landed astride the thing, her feet finding their balance with preternatural ease, hacking downward through the upper part of its head. Down below, Maul yanked himself from the worm's mouth, scrambling back to right himself. He heard a cry and looked over his shoulder to see that the thing, in all its massive weight and appetite, had turned, writhing sidelong to pin Voza beneath it.
The worm turns and there are always more bones.
It was coiling the full extent of its hideous body in an attempt to simultaneously hold her down and devour her. On the far side of the medbay, Eagan was struggling to fire on it with the blaster that he'd taken from Radik's hands, but none of that was going to have any effect on what was happening to Komari Voza. The worm was going to eat her alive. Maul met Voza's eyes. Yet even now, he saw, in what was surely her final moment of life, there was no surrender in her response. No hint of fear in the way she fought it. Watching her, Maul felt a realization stirring beneath the rage to which he'd given himself over. An unfamiliar sense of connection. Primitive and undeniable. She was no Jedi. She was no Sith. She was something completely other. And the idea of giving this worm the privilege of ending her life now was not to be tolerated. Not by Maul. Not today. He charged at it, the makeshift lightsaber swinging sideways in both hands as he thrust it directly into the thing's gaping maw, then planted his feet and spun the blade in a 360-degree arc. His right arm felt like it was on fire. His right shoulder was screaming at him. He ignored it, sweeping the saber around again, carving the very teeth from its mouth, slashing at the mandibles from the inside, then spinning it the other way until he'd chopped the mouth parts themselves to ribbons. The effect was immediate. With a piercing scream that Maul heard both in his mind and in his ears, the worm spasmed and slashed its tail, rolling sideways, as if bewildered by the fact that, after everything that had happened, it had somehow been bested. At last, it fell still. Maul staggered backward, dragging himself from the thing's maw, and saw Komari Voza staring at him, hollow-eyed, from the other side of the medbay. She looked exhausted but triumphant.
You did that.
Reaching up, she shoved the blood-soaked hair from her brow and gave him a wicked grin.
You killed it.
Maul said nothing. His gaze traveled from the great dead bulk of the worm to where Eagan Truax was standing. and he remembered what he had forgotten.
It doesn't matter.
She frowned at him.
Why?
There are electrostatic charges implanted in both of my hearts. Maul told her.
They're going to go off at any second.
But
I'm going to die in this place.
He glanced at the crate on the far side of the medbay.
The material for the weapon is in there. Take it.
Something tightened in the pit of his stomach, and he turned from her, walking toward the hatchway.
In giving it to you, I will be accomplishing the will of my master.
Wait, she said, moving toward him cautiously, hands raised. What do you mean, an electrostatic charge?
There is nothing you can do.
Maul, stop. Something in her voice froze him in the doorway. I see now that I was wrong to attack you. When you stated that you wanted to deliver a weapon into our hands, I anticipated an ambush, some kind of trap. Her voice faltered slightly. I am not used to extending such trust. Maul said nothing. I am a Force user, you know, Voza's voice said, and he could tell from the sound of her voice that she was drawing nearer to him. Maybe there's something I could do after all.
'74, diastole.
When Voza's hands reached out to touch his chest, Maul had to fight back an instinctive desire to lash out and knock her away.
Don't move, she said, eyes closed. If this is going to work, I need to see inside.
He forced himself to hold still, jaw clenched, arms rigid at his sides. He could feel his heart pounding together in unison, cardiac muscle contracting, ventricles paddling their way through a sea of leftover adrenaline from their battle as they counted down the final helpless seconds of his life. But now there was something else inside him too. A subtle probing presence that he identified as a telekinetic representation of Voza herself, winding its way through the chambers of his heart.
What are you?
Egan asked from behind her.
Quiet.
She waited and glanced at Maul.
Hold your breath.
Through gritted teeth, Maul said,
Why?
Because everything moves when you breathe. And I've only got one shot at this. Raising one hand slightly, she spread her fingers and then brought them together as if taking hold of some invisible object. Your hearts are always in motion. I've got less than a second when all four chambers are at rest. Maul felt a bright shock of pain cut through his left chest. He fought the urge to react. It took every ounce of willpower that he had, and then it was gone. Voza opened her eyes and looked at him.
That's it.
Whoa!
Egan said, sounding impressed.
How did you do that? You're sure you got them both?
No, Voza said. But if I'm wrong, we'll all know soon enough. She glanced at the crate on the floor of the medbay. Come on, let's move this thing out of here before another one of us ends up dead. The journey back to the hangar was largely uneventful. Carrying the crate between the three of them, with Egan helping to compensate for Maul's steadily weakening right arm, they made good time. Only once did they come across any sign of life. A small-scale standoff in the prison's metal shop between a heavily armed group of new inmates and the last remaining guards. From what Maul could see, the guards were winning, but only because they knew the terrain. He watched without any particular interest as two of the corrections officers ambushed one of the inmates from behind and tossed him into one of the huge steel baling and shredding machines. The prisoner didn't have time to scream. Beneath him, the floors of Coghive 7 gave a sudden galvanic lurch. The familiar clamor of clockwork began to reverberate through the walls.
What was that?
Voza asked from her end of the crate. Maul and Eagan exchanged a single glance. Then Eagan nodded her onward.
It means we have to hurry.
By the time they got to the corridor outside the hangar, the walls were peeling apart, sliding sideways and slamming together in an ill-fated attempt to align themselves into new levels and layers. The slamming and scraping noises down here were close to deafening. Voza kept throwing wild glances around her as they stepped over the gaps opening up in the floor around them. In every direction, the great metal landscape was racked by constant erratic shuddering.
"Is this normal?" she shouted.
Eagan ducked as a massive sheet of steel flew past his head, spiraling in midair and embedding itself in the opposite wall.
"Nothing's normal here," the boy muttered. "The sooner we're out of here, the better."
Maul trained his eyes on the corridor ahead. As preoccupied as he was with getting the crate aboard the Bandogora ship, there was no mistaking the fact that this reconfiguration was different. That gears and sprockets of Coghive 7 were bent on ripping themselves to shreds. Whether this was some kind of automated self-destruct mode, or simply the inevitable outcome of the matching algorithm run amok, he neither knew nor cared. They were running out of time. Then he realized something else was happening as well. The walls were closing in. He spied the docking port and moved faster, forcing Eagan and Voza into a near run to keep pace.
"Going somewhere?"
a voice behind them asked. Maul's head snapped around to see the fully projected hologram of Jabba poised on his repulsor platform, leering back at them like the last lord of creation. Standing directly in front of the hologram, Maul could see a Trandoshan mercenary, a blaster rifle gripped in his hands. The mercenary leveled the weapon at them until the blaster's barrel became a perfect staring O.
"I see you've made a friend,"
Jabba said, nodding at Voza.
"Sewage always sinks to meet the lowest level. Why am I not surprised?"
He didn't wait for the reply.
"What's in the crate?"
"None of your concern," Maul said. "We're leaving with it."
"Leaving?"
The Hutt chortled and cast a glance at the walls of the hangar.
"No, I think you'll be staying here. I like the idea of seeing you and your new companions being crushed to a pulp inside this metal coffin."
Voza's hands went to her lightsabers.
"Last chance, Jabba."
"Not this time, scum."
With a grimace, the Hutt gestured, the repulsor platform pivoting around, and the Trandoshan opened fire. Maul was already moving. Dropping his end of the crate, he leapt forward, activating his lightsaber midair, and executed a weightless Ataru-style spin, ducking the volley of blaster fire and swinging the blade in an arc at the Trandoshan's neck. The blow decapitated his opponent so swiftly that for a moment the mercenary's headless body remained erect at the edge of the floating platform before tumbling off, disappearing into a gap that had just opened below them. Jabba's eyes rolled up to meet Maul's. The crime lord was saying something, but the words were blocked out by the bleeding cacophony of mechanical noises, and it hardly mattered anyway. With an offhand swing of one arm, the Hutt indicated the docking berth. Maul jumped back down to where Egan and Voza were waiting, and together they carried the crate up the gangway toward the port where Java's ship, the Star Jewel, was ready for departure.
Five hundred Republica.
The lights were dimmed for the evening, and Palpatine emerged from his shower, freshly toweled and draped in a Dramassian shimmer silk robe, to find Higo Damask seated in the dressing room, waiting for him.
Master.
The senator paused in his tracks, his slippered feet coming to rest on the richly brocaded rug.
Welcome.
The unheralded appearance of the moon here in his apartment, at this hour of the night, caught Palpatine off guard, even as he was forced to admit that Damask, as Lord Plagueis, had been in his unconscious thoughts for some time.
This is an unexpected pleasure.
Plagueis nodded.
There are times when those seem to be the only pleasures left, he replied cryptically, and then waved the thought away. But never mind that. You must forgive me the melancholy ruminations, Lord Sidious, even as you forgive the uninvited visit.
Any visit from you is welcome.
Even now?
The moon inquired.
Under these circumstances?
Sidious gazed at him for a moment before nodding.
Ah, he said. You refer to the recent developments on Coghive 7. Yes, I've been informed.
There is no Coghive 7 any longer, it seems.
Plagueis replied ruminatively.
At this point, all scanners report nothing but a loose metallic debris field somewhere in the outer rim.
As requested.
Indeed,
the moon agreed.
Apparently, the entire space station ripped itself to shreds.
He paused, meeting Sidious's gaze.
Immediately after the departure of your apprentice. And he did complete his mission perfectly. Did he not?
Yes,
Sidious said with a nod.
According to our initial bioscans, there were no survivors,
Plagueis said almost gently.
Including your primary target, Iram Radik.
Sidious stared at the moon for a long, searching moment, wondering if there was something else beneath Plagueis's words, an entire substratum of meaning that he'd overlooked until now. Had Plagueis begun to guess at his true purpose in sending Maul to Coghive 7? How would he react to the revelation of what had happened in those final moments, if he ever found out that the Bandar Gora had been there and taken possession of the nuclear device whose procurement had been his ultimate goal there? Yet Plagueis was apparently already moving on to other things.
As you have already learned, he said, the Force has a purpose and will for all things that even you and I have only now begun to discover. By exploiting its fullness, we stand to inherit untold power and glory.
Plagueis paused.
Together.
Sidious said nothing for a long moment. Then he nodded.
Very well,
he said, and then, with some difficulty, managed an indulgent smile.
Although I cannot help feeling that in some way, by risking the possibility of exposure, I have failed you as well.
Have you?
Plagueis regarded him inscrutably.
It seems early to make such a sweeping condemnation.
Then, with a low exhalation of air that signaled the conversation was over, he rose to his feet.
It is late, Senator Palpatine,
and I know that your hours of privacy and leisure are becoming increasingly limited, so I'll show myself out.
His yellow eyes gleamed.
We'll speak again. Soon.
He left Sidious standing in his dressing room. It was a long time before the Sith Lord moved again. Stepping away from the place where he'd been standing, and going to seal the hatch of the dressing room, closing himself inside.
'76, After Image.
In the cargo hold, Maul squatted in the corner, staring protectively at the crate in front of him. He could feel the lethal warmth and vitality of the weaponized uranium, and knew that its deliverance here into the hands of Komari Voza meant that he had been successful. But it meant little to him. Although he had been released from Cargive 7, the electrostatic charges deactivated and dislodged from his hearts, some part of him still felt caged. He had not yet heard from his master. Rising to his feet, he paced the length of the hold, turned and walked back again, his eyes never leaving the crate. Until such time as Darth Sidious came to him directly to commend him on the success of his mission, he remained restless and pensive. The hull of the Star Jewel trembled slightly around him, its great engines gnashing their way from the Tharren sector through the Sizar run on its way back to Hutt Space, where Maul would part ways with Eagan, Komari Voza, and the weapon itself. From there, the future was uncertain. He was acutely aware of Sidious's instructions not to reveal himself as a Sith Lord or rely upon the Force. Unless... No. There could be no mistaking the message. Sidious had intended for him to unleash the full strength of the dark side. And the final moments in the prison, with the worm, with Voza herself, had been another test, in which he only hoped he'd proven himself worthy. So why hadn't Sidious come to him yet? And when would he hear from his master again? He began to pace the hold again, then stopped at the sound of the hatchway hissing open behind him. Maul. Spinning, he dropped his hand to the hilt of his lightsaber, where it remained, even as he recognized the face of the woman emerging from the shadows.
What do you want?
At first, Voza didn't answer. It was impossible to say what she was looking at. From the angle of her head, Maul assumed that her attention was fixated on the crate he'd been guarding, although she might have been looking at him. Just checking on our cargo. Maul didn't move. There seemed to be no appropriate reply to this comment, and he gave none. Jabba's chef is preparing dinner in the galley, Voza said. I'm fairly sure that he won't poison us. But we should let the boy eat first. Then venturing a step nearer, you do eat, don't you? Maul glared at her, held up one hand.
That's close enough.
He worships you, you know. The boy. What he saw you do back there.
The galaxy will harden him soon enough, Maul said. If it doesn't kill him first.
Perhaps you should take him with you. As an apprentice. Maul eyed her, speculatively.
What would you know about apprentices?
Nothing, Voza said in a quiet voice, and then gave a vague, noncommittal nod in the direction of the crate. I don't need to know the details of your mission on Cargive 7. I know that your mission there was in service to a sovereign purpose far beyond yourself.
As was yours,
Maul said. He'd expected her to deny it, to assert that the Bandal Gora served only their own purposes, but Voza actually nodded again. Perhaps that's so, she said. Yet when I look at you, and the way that you and I fought that worm together, I can't help but wonder.
Don't, he growled.
I only meant to say, she faltered, weighing her words carefully. We're neither of us the people that we once were. Who's to say where we might end up?
Maul flicked his gaze in her direction, his yellow eyes meeting hers for a fraction of a second. What he felt there, that uncanny familiarity, felt more dangerous and potentially ensnaring than it had back on Cogive 7, and he dismissed it at once.
How long until we arrive?
You're impatient.
Maul dismissed it.
Simply ready to put this business behind me.
I see. Voza smiled at his tone, as if she'd expected nothing less. Not long now.
Then leave me.
Perhaps I'll see you up above. But Maul had already turned his back on her to stare down at the crate in the corner of the hold. It wasn't until he heard her leave and the hatch sealed shut behind her that he took his eyes off the crate and turned to glance back at the door through which she'd already disappeared.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Maul, Lockdown by Joe Schreiber. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars, Maul, Lockdown is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2014. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.